Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio.
Go to unwsp.edu/startnow.
And a warm welcome to Afternoons with me. I'm Bill Arnold. I'm glad you joined me, and I'm glad we're together. I hope you've had a good day so far, and I hope your week is off to a good start. I'm especially happy because it's really spring-like. I was checking out of the grocery store, and the people that bag groceries seem to have the ability to always speak the truth. He said to me, "How are you doing today?" I said, I'm a little sweaty today, but I'm not complaining. He goes, "That is complaining." I thought, oh, touche, one for you, zero for me. So, but it's one of those days where it's warm enough to be sweating. And I was sweating today thinking, this is not bad. I'm liking this. And it's probably not as hot here as it is in Washington, D.C. It's always a little bit more on the humid side. And Rob Bluey is going to be stepping up to the plate here in just about 60 seconds. We're going to find out all that there is to know about what's going on in Washington, D.C. He's the executive director of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com. And I'm looking at Proverbs chapter 10, verse 8. The wise in heart accept commands, but a chattering fool comes to ruin. I pray I'm never a chattering fool. All right, we'll be back in just a minute.
Faith Radio is so much more than just radio. We are a multimedia ministry encouraging people to connect faith to life every day through a variety of platforms. Now, you may have been driving, captivated by a Faith Radio interview, but not able to listen to it all because you had an appointment, or maybe you had an extra busy day and you missed your favorite show. Well, thankfully, you can go back and listen to any of our programs in their entirety at myfaithradio.com by clicking on podcasts. You can also download the free Faith Radio app to listen to any past programs or check out the live stream. Just search for Faith Radio in iTunes or Google Play. And for Alexa and Amazon Echo devices, just say enable Faith Radio. Then say play Faith Radio to listen to the live stream. Use your connected device to stay encouraged and equipped every day through Faith Radio.
On Tuesdays, I always get to talk to Rob Bluey, who's a perfectly normal man stuck in Washington, D.C. He's the executive editor of the Daily Signal. Rob, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you, Bill.
Oh, no kidding. So let's find out all that's to be known about what's going on in Washington, D.C. this week. Let's start with the tensions in Iran or Iran.
Yes,
what is that, Iran or Iran?
I always go with Iran.
Okay.
the E sounding.
Yeah.
But hey, Bill, you could correct me, and maybe I've been saying it wrong all these years. But in any case, it is truly a situation that we're following, because it does seem that the tensions have heightened to a point where there's now talk of perhaps sending upwards of over 100,000 troops. President Trump, by the way, we should note, has come out and said called that fake news today, but at the same time has threatened to send even more troops if necessary to counter the threat of Iran. So, you know, we can go back to the Obama administration and the Iran deal, which was highly criticized by conservatives and President Trump, and pinpoint some of the problems that we've had in working with this country, and it's a flagrant violation of international norms when it comes to terrorism and developing nuclear weapons. So we should be concerned about this. It's always a hotbed of activity, and we're monitoring it very closely, and I'm glad to hear that the Defense Department is putting a plan together should it be necessary.
Yeah, 120,000 troops, that's a big chunk of troops. And Iran is never one to be very willing to come to the peace table, are they?
No, certainly not. And that was part of the problem with the Iran deal that was negotiated by President Obama and Joe Biden is they gave away a lot. You might remember the cash payments and The fact that the United States didn't get as much in return that that many people thought we should have for the concessions that we were willing to make to Iran. Unfortunately, it seems that they've taken some of the cash and money that they were able to gather in terms of opening up different channels of transactions here and develop some problems that we're now confronting. So President Trump has pulled us out of the Iran deal, but we still have a situation where the two countries are not on friendly terms, and we are seeing, in some cases, some escalation of tensions in that area.
Yeah. Okay, Rob, yesterday the market was down about 600 points. Today it's up a little over 200. So I know that has something to do with the China trade war talks. Where do you think this is at right now?
Yeah, it's another big story. President Trump was hoping to have a deal in place last week. When that didn't come to fruition, he imposed tariffs on China. China, of course, retaliated against the United States. Unfortunately, I think this is going to have a bad effect on your listeners and me and all of us, because consumers are the ones who end up paying the cost when tariffs are imposed by these countries. So the companies that are being hit with higher prices are just going to pass that down onto consumers, and we'd like a situation where there's no tariffs on either side, and I think that that's ultimately where we want to get to. Is this just a negotiating tactic on the president's part? It very well could be. I think that the big question out there is how long does it actually last? It seems like the two sides, China and the United States, are pretty far apart on coming together on any sort of trade deal. And the president reiterated today that he's going to be in this for the long haul. He feels that China is going to feel the brunt of this much harder than the United States. But there's also going to be probably some political calculations here in play. The president certainly doesn't want to be losing the support of voters out in the Midwest who might be hit particularly hard in states like Iowa, for instance, Bill, because soybeans are a big part of this negotiation and are going to feel the effects of these tariffs.
Mm-hmm. Rob, does China play by the rules or do they sort of play to their own rules?
Oh, they play to their own rules. You're absolutely correct on that. I mean, there's no doubt that China's been in violation. That's one of the things that the president, I think, has articulated pretty well. His solution for addressing it might not be the one that I would pick, but he, I think, has been able to frame this issue in a way that has really captured the Americans' hearts, because they recognize that China is not cooperating and in many cases is doing things unfairly. And they're glad that somebody's finally standing up to China, which they see as a bully in many respects. And President Trump has not been afraid to take that fight to them. You know, he's talked about meeting with President Xi at the G20. We'll see if that comes to fruition. It's one of those things at the end of the day where the president has said he'd like to get to a position where there's no tariffs on either side. And I think that that's ultimately where we want to see things end up. So nobody's paying a higher cost for washing machines or agriculture products or you name it. I mean, the list goes on and it's quite extensive. And it's many consumer goods that we're quite accustomed to using.
And the president is very clear about wanting products to be manufactured and made in America, and then there's going to be no tariffs for them as well.
He certainly is. He's talked about that. He's made quite clear that one of the best ways to avoid paying these higher prices is for companies to either move to Vietnam, to come back to the United States, to go places and do business other than China. So this is where I think he's trying to put the pressure on China in ways, aside from the tariffs, is to get those companies out of China and manufacturing the products in countries that maybe have more favorable trade relations with the United States. Let's face it, at the end of the day, China is a communist country. I mean, we're talking about two countries that are ideologically very different, which have two different China views the United States as an adversary because they want to be the global superpower themselves. So there are other factors at play here beyond just the consumer goods at stake. I think that that's why this might not be resolved anytime soon, even though I think it would be to the benefit of all Americans and the Chinese for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Just an aside, Rob, I could sell a lot of Rob Bluey bobbleheads on this show as long as they're not made in China.
Well, we should manufacture them right there in Minnesota.
I think we should. All right. So Representative Tlaib made some comments about the Holocaust, which are under fire.
Yeah, certainly. This is something that greeted us right at the start of the week yesterday. On a podcast, she made a reference to the Holocaust having a calming effect on her. I think it was worded inarticulately. But, you know, as part of a pattern of anti-Semitic type of comments from new members of Congress this year, it's just chalked up as the latest one. And I think that it speaks to the danger in kind of this revisionist history that we seem to be having. A lot can be said about, whether or not she's right to be criticized over this or if Republicans jumped on her too aggressively. But I think that the thing that disturbs me more than anything is the fact that the Jewish people suffered tremendous losses. And what was done was, in the creation of Israel, a great act on the part of humanity to provide a safe space for people who were coming out of World War II and the Holocaust. And her characterization of it is not accurate at all. I mean, in fact, the Palestinians were on the wrong side of history when it comes to Hitler and World War II, and that's conveniently left out of the comments here. So I will say this, though. Bill, I think that it's another example of how social media really, in some cases, poisons our culture, and why in talking to people who have been on the receiving end of some of these attacks, really I think it's important that we take a break to pause, and before we jump on somebody and attack them, let's try to have an educational discussion like you and I often do every Tuesday rather than trying to score points in tweets.
Mm-hmm. Rob Louie is my guest, executive editor of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com. That's dailysignal.com. After 90 seconds, we'll be back with more with Rob. We were not gone long. Rob Louie is my guest. He's the executive director of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com to learn more about Rob and all of his colleagues and the brilliant work they do. You're going to want to check that out for sure. All right, Rob, I hate to go back into this, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. Okay, the Democrats now, they're blasting the attorney general over the Mueller report. And, okay, can he be impeached for what, obeying the law?
Yeah, the story that never ends. It seems that there's a real disconnect between the Democrats in Washington and the rest of the American people on this, who I think are ready to move on.
Oh yes.
Now let's recap where we are on this. So the House Judiciary Committee, which is controlled by Democrats, has voted to hold the Attorney General in contempt because they are dissatisfied with the fact that he will not release the final 2% of the report that has been redacted.
Mm-hmm.
It's been redacted, by the way, because he's required to do so under the law. There's certain information that is contained in the report. Again, it's 2% of the report. That's conveniently left out of most news stories, I should note. And the Democrats have access, leaders in Congress have access to 98% of the rest of the report. So they're unsatisfied with that. I think that's why it's so much political theater here and not really based on a whole lot of substance. The Attorney General just yesterday has announced that he's appointed a U.S. attorney from Connecticut to look into how the whole matter began. And this could be embarrassing for the Democrats, because if you recall, the whole matter began under a Democratic administration when Barack Obama and Joe Biden were in the White House. And so we shall see where that ends up leading. It means that, Bill, you and I are going to be talking about this probably for at least another year.
I was taking a walk the other night, and I was thinking about this no collusion and all this. And I was thinking, if the Russians did interfere with the election, how did it affect the election? Does some guy walk into his voting booth in Toledo, Ohio, and somehow the Russians got a hold of him and they made him change his mind?
Well, the charge is that there were things done like Russia operatives placing ads on Facebook that may have persuaded people, but the it was so minuscule, the number of the amount of money that they spent and the number of ads in the grand scheme of the political debate that were ended up being served. It's hard to see how those would have influenced the election, but you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, there we've seen throughout history. I mean, there have been examples of foreign governments that have tried to influence U.S. elections. I mean, this is not the first time that anyone has tried to do it. What's unclear here is if the what Russia was trying to do had any tangible impact on either side, and it doesn't appear that it did. And in many cases, they've continued to try to sow discord in the United States through contentious issues and things like Black Lives Matter. And so I think it's something that we all need to be mindful of. It's why we need to turn to multiple different sources, including the Daily Signal and Faith Radio for our news and information, and why we can do our best service as Americans by being informed citizens.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rob, I know healthcare is going to be a big issue in 2020. The Democrats, can they flip the healthcare script? If you like your plan, you can't keep it. Is that going to be able to work?
Well, you know, it's it's one of those issues that's going to be really interesting, Bill, because the past 2 weeks, the Democrats in the House have brought up legislation to vote on health care. They wanted to strip away some of the experimental the one section of Obamacare that allows states to experiment with health care. Section 1332 gives states that power. The Trump administration has encouraged states to use it to try innovative ways to improve health care. There's another plan again this week that they're bringing up. And, of course, you have the presidential candidates who have their own ideas, whether it be Medicare for All or other new policy proposals. Now, President Trump has challenged his own party and said that he wants Republicans to be the party of health care. I truly hope, Bill, that this does become a signature issue of the 2020 presidential campaign. I think we need to have an honest debate about health care in this country. I think that there are solutions out there that are quite different between the right and the left, and the American people deserve to hear what vision both the Republican candidate and the Democratic candidate have for health care, and then we need to work with members of Congress to actually see this through to completion. This has dragged on for far too long. Obamacare isn't the solution. It's failing, and it's time to come forward with a solution that would actually benefit the American people by giving them choice, lower their premiums, and put them on a better path and healthier path in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Rob, religious freedom, too. This is something that protects people's rights and their ability to speak and worship. And if this is going to be something that's going to be in jeopardy, it's going to change the game a great deal.
Well, it's right there in the First Amendment, right, Bill? I mean, yeah. It is central to this country, and right from the start, it's played a critical role in who we are as a culture and a society, and why you and I are able to have this conversation. I mean, it all comes down to that freedom to hold those beliefs and to worship, and we see that under attack nearly daily. You know, whether it's in the courts or whether it's in Congress, there's an effort this week to pass legislation called the Equality Act, which would do grave damage to everything from women's sports to religious organizations by taking a big government heavy-handed approach to how laws are adjudicated and impose new restrictions that I think many Christians would suffer under because it's not necessarily in accordance with our beliefs. And so religious freedom is paramount, and it's one of the reasons why we've made it such a priority to cover those types of stories at the Daily Signal. And I'll tell you, Bill, those stories are some of the most popular stories that we publish every week at the Daily Signal. I encourage your listeners to check them out. And I think that the reason that they are so popular is people understand that religious freedom is under attack. They see it in their own lives, and they see it in the stories that we're reporting on. And it's unfortunate that it is, but it's something that we have to be very vigilant and mindful of.
I mean, Rob, it's never good to be forcing anybody to choose between living out what they believe, their faith, and trying to, serve in their business. I mean, we have plenty of vendors out there that can serve everybody.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we saw this in numerous cases with weddings. Whether it's a gay couple asking a Christian baker to make a wedding cake or a florist who's Christian to provide the service for the wedding, there are plenty of alternatives out there. Many cases, these cases are brought against these Christian business owners in part because they really just want to go after their beliefs, and they want to either shut them down or put them out of business. And I think that's unfortunate because, as you say, there are plenty of other people who are willing to provide those services for the weddings. And by the way, we should note that in almost all these cases, I haven't found one yet, and your listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, but in many of these cases, you have Christian business owners who regularly serve gay and lesbian customers. They're simply saying that they're not going to provide these services for a gay or lesbian wedding. And there's a distinction there because it's their deeply held Christian beliefs. And so I think that that's really what's at stake here. And we have to be mindful of the threats that are on the horizon.
Mm-hmm. You know, not to mention there are shopping directories that have always been around where, you know, there's a Christian business shopping directory if you want to go find a, you know, a Christian painter or someone that says, I'm a follower of Jesus and I can roof your house. I mean, doesn't mean they're going to, you know, be better than the next roofer or painter, but they're just living their faith out. And I know that it's the same with the LGBTQ community. They've got directories. If you want to hire someone to arrange your flowers or bake you a cake, they're more than happy to do it for you.
That's right. Yeah, no, you're right. And I think that's what's great about this country that we live in. People have the freedom to be able to do that. And it's not the government stepping in and posing restrictions on that freedom and limiting your ability to live your life as you see fit and in accordance with your religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Rob, we just got a couple of minutes left. Is there any other topic on your desk that's kind of got your energy up?
Well, I do want to tell you about a great interview we just did. It'll be featured on the Daily Signal tomorrow with Senator Tom Cotton. The president was tweeting about him this morning because he has a brand new book out called Sacred Duty. And I'll tell you, Bill, this really gave me an appreciation. We're just a few weeks from Memorial Day about the service and the sacrifice that members of our military make. Senator Cotton, prior to being elected from the state of Arkansas, was part of the Old Guard, which is the oldest unit in the U.S. Army. It dates back 4 years before the Constitution, in fact. And the Old Guard works at Arlington National Cemetery. And every year on Memorial Day, they place a flag, a U.S. flag, on every single grave. There's over 2,500 of them, and it is just remarkable the work that this unit does to preserve the traditions and to honor those who have served. They do all the funerals at Arlington. They're at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And, you know, I just encourage your listeners to take a moment to you know, pray for those families who do have loved ones in harm's way and all the veterans out there who've made so many sacrifices. It was really great to hear from Senator Cotton himself, you know, a member, a veteran, and somebody who's taken the time, what he says the first time, to tell this story, and it is a fascinating book. So check that out. We were really grateful to have an opportunity to chat with him.
Mm-hmm. And then when are the kids out of school?
Well, we've got a little bit over a month, I think, still, just about a month. It's test time, and so the older one is taking a lot of tests these days.
Okay.
You know, standardized tests. That's what they do in school. Not that we didn't have it when we were in school, but you know, that and baseball between the two, Bill, it's keeping us busy.
And then, do the Blues eat around the table most nights?
We do. We make it a priority to have dinner together. And, you know, during baseball season, it can sometimes be tough. So the older one's got a game tonight. So we'll probably be eating more like 8 o'clock. But we always do it together. We make it a priority to be around that table, to say a prayer when we start, and to have a great family conversation. And those kids love talking at dinner.
I bet they do. Rob, thanks so much for doing the show. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Yep. Rob Bluey's been my guest, executive editor of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com. Learn all about many of the articles we talked about today are there up on the website. Check it out. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to the show. I am delighted to have on our studio line Dr. Jerry Bergman. He got his PhD in biology, but he's got 9 degrees, including 7 graduate degrees, and he is going to be, lucky for us, on the campus of the University of Northwestern next Tuesday, speaking at chapel, and I couldn't wait to get a chance to get a little preview of what that's going to be about. And Dr. Bergman, welcome to the show. How does it feel talking to someone who has better part of 1 degree?
Well, I can't always judge people on their degrees. I find some people who don't have any degrees but do a lot of reading, a lot of study, and a lot of thinking can meet me equally any day.
That is so true. I appreciate that. Now, you are going to be here at Northwestern, and I was fascinated by the title of your talk called Darwin's Frauds, Blunders, and Forgeries. And it certainly seems that in today's secular world, believing in Darwinism and evolution, is they kind of bully you to agree to it, don't they?
Yes, they do, very much so. And that is a huge problem for science as well as for those people like us of faith.
So tell me, if you can, you know, how we should be questioning evolution, and how do we appear like, as people of faith, how do we approach this?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people don't question evolution. In fact, some people question nothing in science, but unfortunately, science has often been wrong. And I've been documenting these. I find it interesting because in some cases, science has been so, so incredibly wrong, and they've caused a lot of harm. But of course, this shouldn't detract from the science. People who do good work, and there are many as well.
All right. I'm fascinated now when you say science can be wrong. I don't disagree with that, and you're a scientist, so I'm going to take your word, obviously. But I would love to start picking through some of the theories of that Darwin has that turned out not to be very smart or true at all.
Well, one of the main ones was the origin of genetic information. And he really had no idea how information was developed or how it came about in organisms. Information, we're talking about DNA and so on in the genome. And he really speculated. In fact, in the end, he moved toward Lamarckian biology because he just could not come up with other theories. He did come up with one theory that he talked about quite a bit, but that theory turned out to be totally and completely wrong. And it's interesting, it's if you to study this theory, but he's trying to figure out where does this information come from. And he tried several times, and even his contemporaries realized that his idea was simply wrong. It does not come in the way that he thought it did. In fact, he again had no idea of the origin of genetic information. Today, scientists by and large accept the idea of mutations, that mutations originates new information in the genome. The problem with that is that the vast majority of mutations are either harmful or near neutral. Near neutral means they don't cause a problem immediately, but they add up. It's like small damage here and there, and eventually something fails. And that's what happens because this damage accumulates, and we end up with what they call medical catastrophe or genetic catastrophe because it causes medical problems.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bergman, can you give us a little history of Darwin? Where did his theories come from?
Well, his theories come from basically, ironically, and he's quite clear about this, that he, for some reason, and the scholars debate as to why, but for some reason, he hated God, very angry at God and what God did. And so he wanted to murder God. And that was his words, by the way. He wanted to murder God. How do you murder God? You murder God by destroying the reason people believe in him. As Romans 1:20 says, basically, the evidence around us, the heavens, declare the glory of God, and therefore you destroy the reason people believe in him, and that's the creation. And he did that by coming up with another creator deliberately, and his other creator was evolution. But again, he failed, although his ideas are widely accepted, but he failed because he couldn't come up, as I mentioned, with the origin of new genetic information. He's famous for his idea of natural selection. The problem with natural selection is it's got to have something to select from. And, of course, if you have no new genetic information, what can it select from? Well, scientists have never been able to answer that.
When I'm looking at your list of books that you've published, it's so interesting. I am fascinated with your research and what you have done for this topic. And when I'm looking at a book called How Darwinism Corrodes Morality, Darwinism, Immorality, Abortion, and the Sexual Revolution. I would love to hear some about that.
Well, clearly, Darwinism has affected morality, and there are many examples, but one of the best examples is the Supreme Court ruling a number of years ago, Roe v. Wade. And the argument was, indeed, is the fetus or the embryo, are these human? Are these people? Are these actual persons? And several scientists, one in particular, testified that his conclusion was, no, they are not, because in the womb we develop from the same line that we evolve from. In other words, at one time we were fish, we evolved into reptiles and so on, and they argued that the embryos likewise go through the same stage of evolution as we ourselves, they teach, went through a long time ago. And that's called ontogeny recapitulate phylogeny. And they argued basically at the time abortion occurred that we were not humans, but we were fish. And therefore, you're not killing a human, but you're killing a fish. Now, we know that idea is simply wrong, but nonetheless, that was widely believed for many years, primarily due to the work of Ernst Haeckel, who was a German scientist, who, by the way, Hitler admired quite a bit. And therefore, these ideas became widespread until actually many years ago, but just recently it was exposed clearly as a fraud. And now we have Haeckel's fraudulent embryos because he distorted the drawings he used to prove this idea, ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. They were not drawn very accurately. And some scientists, probably about 20 years ago, said, let's look at these examples that Haeckel used and let's see how close they are to human embryos. And they're not even close at all. And now we know that he forged his drawings, and therefore he was basically trying to convince us of something that we now know is not true.
Mm-hmm. When you say that he was hated God and obviously wanted to write God out of the world, it sounds...
The murder God.
That yeah, the murder God, yeah. So obviously this guy's got a very dark side, and I know you wrote a book called The Dark Side of Darwin. I would love to explore more how the Darwin's theories have moral implications, how it gave rise to eugenics and race ethnic-based discrimination.
Well, eugenics, of course, is a good area because so much has been written about that, and we can therefore document indeed what happened. But Darwin basically believed that evolution means that the fittest are more apt to survive. The less fit are less apt to survive. And he talked about the problem that why should we save people with medicine who are less fit, who have diseases, who have a predisposition to a number of diseases? Why not eliminate them from the gene pool? And that way we can actually further evolution. We can grab a hold of evolution and we can further evolution by indeed selecting the fit intellectually using our minds and not letting nature do it in the long run. And then he admitted himself that this is not practical, but unfortunately, many people have read these ideas in his books and have accepted them and did apply it, and therefore we end up with eugenics and the Holocaust and Hitler's attempt, of course, to eliminate the weaker races, and the weaker races he assumed was the Jews and the Slavics and Gypsies and so on, and therefore mm-hmm. it's well recognized the important influence Darwin had on this idea and what happened in killing many, many people because they were assumed to be inferior.
Mm-hmm. You've got a recent piece of work called Evolution is the Doorway to Atheism. I'd love for you to say more about that.
Right. Science research has found that indeed that discovery of understanding of evolution leads people to believe that, well, we don't need God as creator. Therefore, what's the point of God? Therefore, the evidence is that we evolve through natural means. Therefore, there's no need for God, as Philip Johnson likes to say. We put God out of a job. And this has been widely accepted for many, many people. And as a result of accepting this idea, people have become atheists. And what I did in the book was I looked at many people who were Christians, who were active in the church, etc., and who went to college, accepted evolution, and became atheists, and often very vehement against creation and against God. And there are many examples of well-known people like Lenin, Darwin himself, and Stalin, and Karl Marx, and so many other people that indeed were, or at least claimed to be professed Christians, and appeared to be such on the outside, but once they accepted the Darwinian worldview, then they became atheists. And this is a common doorway into atheism. And my own background, I was at one time in college, as some of us fall away. In college, fall away from a lot of our traditions that we learned from our folks. And I accepted the atheist worldview, and as a result, became involved in the atheist movement. And we learned, as I was involved in this movement, that this is the doorway to atheism. And therefore, most of the journals that we published in were spent more time pushing evolution as opposed to atheism, because we realize that. And that's why atheists are so heavily involved in pushing Darwinism in the schools, because they know this is how they get recruits. This is how they get people from the church, and this is how they get people involved in the atheist movement. And so it's very, very widespread, very well accepted that indeed evolution is the doorway to atheism. And this is one reason why Christians and Jews and Muslims, by the way, have always been pretty active, historically at least, in opposing Darwinism, because they realize that it's the doorway to loss of acceptance of the Christian message.
You know, Dr. Bergman, I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking there's a pretty good transformation story here going just with you yourself.
Yeah, I was at one time an atheist. And
yeah, so I want to hear more about that. I want to hear about your transformation.
Well, when I was in college, of course, we're exposed to evolution heavily. And I remember looking in my paleontology book some evolutionary precursors to man, to modern man. And they lined them all up, and here's Neanderthals in there and Piltdown Man. This is an old book we use, by the way, et cetera. And it looked pretty obvious. I mean, here we've got the skulls. We got evidence that, indeed, we were at one time ape-like creatures, and we evolved to man. And I saw this pretty convincing. I still have the book, by the way, and I remember that was kind of a pivotal moment that, indeed, evolution is true. And therefore, what did God do? There's no function for God. There's no reason for God to exist. Now, other things as well, but this helped me to be convinced that, indeed, the atheist worldview is correct. Later on, though, as I became involved in the atheist movement, I became very discouraged because atheists basically want to, by force, by government policy, by the courts, they want to suppress Christianity, Judaism, and the Muslim faith, and they want to replace this with the atheist faith. And I thought, as an atheist, let people, if they want to be Christians or Muslims, that's fine, let them be. But they wanted to force, by the courts, their worldview, and I had a hard time with that because I think that, you know, even as an atheist, I felt there were some good people who were Christians. And so I opposed what they were doing, and as time went on, I did more and more research relative to their claims, and indeed I found so many of their arguments were simply wrong. And I'll just mention a few: the Galileo case, the so-called Inquisition, the Dark Ages, and so on, that these are greatly exaggerated, or indeed they were false narratives that the atheists gave us. And they didn't, of course, talk much about the other side, the fact that Christianity has started schools and colleges and seminaries and hospitals and so on. And they ignored, indeed, how central Christianity was in the Western worldview. And they ignored, basically, the good and focused on the bad. And, of course, there's some bad. There's people who call themselves Christians who are not. We all know of these people. But they ignored, by and large, the good. And this bothered me. And eventually, as I did more and more research, I realized that, indeed, the atheist worldview was wrong and the Christian worldview is correct. And this is why I have a companion book, which basically says that science is the doorway to faith in God. And that book contains 80 cases of people who were atheists, who didn't accept the Christian worldview and became Christians and theists as a result of their scientific study. And indeed, there are many people I know that became Christians as a result of the study of science. And this has been partially my own journey, in that once you study science, you realize there has to be an intelligent creator. You learn so much by studying the natural world. And I just am really enthralled with this, and I probably will spend the rest of my life.
Well, I'm sure you will. There's so many scientists that have had profound experiences with God based on their work. And, I mean, their history is filled with Christian scientists, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. In fact, virtually all scientists, as far as we know, were at least theists in the Western world, of course, Christians, until Darwin. In fact, Darwin really changed the world in many ways. And one way he changed the world was is that scientists today, from recent studies, eminent scientists, well-known scientists, something like 98% are atheists. And so the evolutionary worldview has indeed changed the world in many, many ways, evil as well.
Dr. Jerry Bergman is my guest. He is going to be here on the campus of University of Northwestern speaking at chapel, but we're trying to get a preview of what he's going to be chatting about. He's speaking about Darwin's frauds, blunders, and forgeries. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, lots more with Dr. Bergman. Welcome back to the show. I have on our guest line Dr. Jerry Bergman. 9 degrees, 7 which are graduate. That's very impressive. We're chatting about Darwin today. And I'm curious, Dr. Bergman, you talked about science as the doorway to faith. Isn't it usually presented as an either-or option?
Well, yeah, it often is. But when you study science itself, and I have 3 degrees from medical school, and we were not concerned there with evolution so much. And it was there, but it wasn't prominent. We're concerned with helping people, understanding how the body works. And when you study the body, you realize that it's just enormously complex, and it works so incredibly well. And one course I remember in particular was toxicology. Now, you might wonder why in the world I would find that course very important. Well, because that the body has an incredible repair system that is constantly repairing just about everything. And the book went into detail about how and why it repairs just about everything. And therefore, you wonder why in the world would it have this incredibly complex repair system which works against evolution, because evolution, you're looking for changes. The repair system doesn't do that. It does the opposite. It tries to repair. It tries to maintain. It tries to reduce the level of mutations, reduce the damage that mutation causes. And so it's just, it's a huge, thick book that I studied, and I detailed, but on the other hand, it made me realize how enormously complex the body is and how well it takes care of itself. And if you look at our own lives, we can see that we don't always take good care of our body, and yet it does pretty well, considering the many abuses. And myself, in many cases where I worked, for example, in a factory for a while, and I was exposed to very loud sounds for long periods of time. Well, we know now that's harmful, but yet it's amazing that I survived that work with my hearing intact. And there are other examples as well, which we all can relate to.
So one of the books you talked about, vestigial organs, and they're fully functional, a history and evaluation of the vestigial organ or origins concept. Even that introduction to this idea is confusing to me. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Well, the idea is that we have all they claim. We have all these organs which have no function. And therefore, why would God create us with all these organs that don't have any function, like the appendix and the tonsils and the adenoids and the thymus gland and the pineal gland and so on? Why would God put all these organs there? But evolution, they claim, can explain this, because evolution bumbles along and it makes organs which work pretty well, but in time we have a different environment and therefore these organs no longer needed. And as a result, they claim this was incredibly good evidence for evolution. Well, as I did research on this, I found indeed that all of these organs have not only uses, but many have important uses. And this turned out to be a wrong turn in evolution, because this was widely accepted for many years. And one quick example is, when I was young, the doctor says, well, we got to get those tonsils out. And I said, well, why? I had an idea what surgery was, and I didn't want to go through that. And so they said, well, they have no function, they're useless, you better get them out when you're young. And that way, when you're older, there's more problems in taking them out, and that way we have this taken care of. And so I was about four or five. And so they took out my tonsils, and I remember that very vividly, and ever since then I've been interested in this subject. And in time, when I went to medical school especially, I learned that the tonsils indeed have very important functions. They are the body's first defense against bacteria and viruses, and therefore you need to leave them in. Well, now we have extensive studies that shows indeed that you are far better off when you have tonsils, and now the medical procedure is do whatever you can to save them. Now, sometimes you can't. They have to be removed. But on the other hand, you should do what you can to save them, as well as the appendix and these other organs. And so we've gone from 100 to none. It's well recognized that all of these organs have a very important function, and this idea that evolutionists have pushed for so long is not only wrong, but harmful. In fact, they estimate that thousands of people have died as a result of these operations which were not necessary. And in my case, they weren't necessary, but they've caused me problems ever since. And I know now if they would have left them in, because there's nothing wrong with them. The doctor said, let's just get them out. It was a prophylactic procedure. And so I had them out, but big mistake. Now, hopefully, that's not going to happen.
Dr. Bergman, maybe you could speak to some of our listeners who maybe challenged, or maybe their faith has been shaken by this scientific Darwinianism critiques. Maybe they're feeling like Christians think that they must accept evolution in some form rather than just biblical creation.
Right, that's called theistic evolution, and that's bad theology and it's bad science.
So perfect,
it fails on every side. But it's a common reason people leave, of course, the faith, and that's why I go out and speak, because people find that they indeed, once they understand that evolution is just not true, it's just false. And once they understand that, they realize that indeed this should not be a threat to their faith. Now, science is not the problem. The problem is the evolutionary indoctrination. And once they study, and my sources are scientific journals. I'm not repeating the scriptures in my scientific articles. Basically, I'm looking at the science. What does the science say? And the science consistently says, indeed, evolution is impossible. It just could not occur. The evidence is overwhelming against the evolutionary worldview. And therefore, to me and many others, it can be an enormous source of confidence in the Christian message and the scriptures. And that's why I encourage people who like science, hopefully, to learn more. Often you become evolutionist because you know a little bit about science. When you know a lot more, then you're going to move away from the evolutionary worldview, because indeed, it's just overwhelming evidence against evolution.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to a fourth grade science teacher who's a Christian, who's teaching in a public school?
Well, the best way is just teach the science. And students might bring up, well, gee, what is the appendix doing? It doesn't have any function. Say, well, no, actually, it's quite important. And often in things that you wouldn't expect that would be a problem are, and one example is when I was teaching biology at the college, I talked about the fact why deciduous trees lose leaves. And they lose leaves because the snow could knock the tree over. So therefore, they lose the leaves before it snows, and then when snow is not a concern, the leaves grow back. And I just explained that, just a very basic idea, which helps them understand botany. And there's a student who raised his hand and said, that's amazing, there must be a God. And I thought, well, that's an interesting comment and something so trivial, but on the other hand, this information impressed the student. Well, this is what happens over and over when you understand the science, that you realize that, indeed, the only explanation we have is an intelligent, wise, all-loving creator, and we need to appreciate that. And so I find, many people find that very reinforcing. A friend of mine who is into trees, he's a botanist that specializes in trees, he says he feels most closely to God in a forest. And this is when I have my spiritual insight, when I gain insight, and when I can be at prayer with God is in a forest, because indeed that is a place being around that to me is just, he tells me, just enthralling.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I feel the same way, that indeed I love trees and I love forests. In fact, churches in the medieval period were designed to look like a forest. If you look at the side of the tree, the side of the church, it goes up inside, goes up, and then it curves around like trees would do in a forest area. And so one of the purposes of the design in medieval churches was to mimic a forest, because many people feel closer to God in this environment than in many other environments.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jerry Bergman, 9 degrees, have you paid off all your student loans?
Well, I studied hard and got a lot of scholarship money.
I figured you did.
Scholarship money.
We are absolutely looking forward to seeing you on campus next Tuesday. Thank you so much. If you want to learn more about Dr. Jerry Bergman, go to creation.com. That's creation.com. Safe travels, Dr. Bergman. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Hour two is just underway. We'll take a very short break and be back with lots more. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.